order, and the U.S. is becoming weak every day. And the reason why the U.S. is becoming weak every day is because the Zionist agenda within the U.S., it's being unmasked by the people here.
Well, thank you so much for being with me, Mohsen Naqvi, activist and organizer out of Houston. I will let you go and let you get some rest. Appreciate you being with us very late over there. As you're looking at these images continuing to come in on your screen, you're looking at now from the city of Gorgan in Iran, as the rallies are on, definitely up and about, and ralliers are pouring in to the streets in various cities throughout the country of Iran. And this is the capital city you're looking at right there, Tehran, where people, as I had said earlier when we first showed images at 10, that it usually takes, especially the people in the capital, Tehran, is a little bit longer to come out. And now it's 11 o'clock. And you can see that more and more people are showing up again from various cities. This is Shiraz now. And earlier we were showing other parts of the country, and some of them in the very southern parts of the country that's very warm. And again, on this day, another day of fasting here in Iran. And of course, the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan. I think I still have Masoud Shajadeh with me. Masoud, I want you to just touch on it, what we're seeing. Do you feel that we are in a transition? Mohsen Naqvi out of the States was saying basically that though this censorship, media censorship exists, but through social media and through various activists, we're seeing more and more awareness. What's your take on that? Inside of the UK, your assessment overall, do you see that that awareness and the activity is increasing or not?
Absolutely, Marzia. We are seeing a huge awareness coming within Britain, within Europe, United States, and indeed around the world. We are seeing a contract between some leaderships or overwhelming majority of leaderships who are really coming out of the closet and supporting openly and publicly this normalization with Israel and this Zionist regime. And then the masses going exactly the opposite. And these masses who are going opposite are not just in the sort of Arab and Muslim world, but they are all over Europe and Western world. And we are seeing that they are becoming so much committed, not looking at the sort of the atrocities of apartheid regime just as a sort of individual killings, how many atrocities, how what they're doing with the children, what they're doing, families, etc., etc. That this regime and understanding that the regime, the apartheid regime, it's in its nature to behave like this, to commit war crimes, to commit atrocity, to target children, to destroy people's homes and future. And that understanding is essential. It's essential for us then to unite and focus on removing this apartheid system rather than having an illusion of sort of reforming it. But also the commitment is so strong that, you know, despite all the difficulties of and paying the price, look, we here and our brothers in the United States and Europe, they definitely have to pay a price to stand up and support the Palestinian cause.
What does that mean, Masoud, when you say they definitely have to pay a price, those individuals who are standing up for that in Europe? What do you mean? Can you expand on that?
Well, they demonize us. They sort of create the illusion that we are, you know, let me give you an example. This year, just before our post day, the Zionist papers in United Kingdom actually targeted us and said as we announced that Al-Quds is going to be back on the streets of London, they actually announced that virus viruses are coming back to the streets of London. They actually refer to us as virus. And that actually gives the level of demonization that you are not dealing with people coming out and expressing their political views and their right of expression. But you're actually referring to them as viruses that needs to be sort of dealt with as virus. And we know 2-3 years ago, Osborne came, an individual extreme right activist came, a thug, came with his truck to drive into the Al-Quds rally. And when he missed it and wasn't able to do that, went outside a masjid and drove into the worshippers outside the masjid. So when you demonize people to this extent, then, you know, people behave towards them in that way. People like David Miller, a professor of highest standing, he was removed from his post in the university while the university itself admitted that he has done nothing illegal, he has done nothing anti-Semite, but nevertheless, they said that he's brought the university to disrepute, and they removed him. And same thing is being faced by many, many others. And so on one side in the West, we pay this price. On the other side, in places like Nigeria, people are actually becoming shaheed on Al-Quds Day. Three children of Sheikh Zakzaki became shaheed on Al-Quds Day. My heart actually goes to all those people who, despite the fact of being shot at, tear gassed and so forth, they still go out in millions, in millions. And today we're going to see that. And people in Kashmir, despite the fact that they are being oppressed in the way that Kashmir is systematically being oppressed, mm-hmm. they don't forget Al-Quds Day. They come out. And
that is one of the amazing parts of all of this, Masoud, that those who are oppressed themselves, though, are actually still standing up for the Palestinian people. Thanks so much, Masoud Shajadeh, Chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, for being with us here today on Press TV out of London. Well, viewers, you're looking at these live images coming from throughout the country as you see monitors that are centered in, from the north, south, east, and west of various cities throughout the country as people are turning out in mass in many of these cities. It's the first time after 2 years, of after COVID restrictions and not being able to actually have the demonstrations in person. They did some things online, but in general, this is the first time after 2 years that we're seeing the whole country, once again, people turning out here in the Islamic Republic of Iran in mass, supporting the people of Palestine. I'd like to welcome my next guest to the program out of New Delhi, activist and journalist Prabir Paryashta. Thank you so much for being with me. Well, you're in India. Tell me about the amount of support coming from your country for the Palestinian cause.
Well, the Palestinian cause is much more central to India's politics earlier. I think with the kind of political change that has been taking place in India, what we are seeing is that it is no longer central to India's foreign policy as it used to be. And with the rise of a certain kind of politics in India itself, which is basically much more right-wing, closer to the United States, and also has made its relationship with Israel something which is of disturbing nature for all of us, I think we do find that that kind of support which was there in India has weakened. Nevertheless, there is a strong community who believes that India's earlier anti-colonial policies, which also included Israel's settler colonial project, was something to be opposed.
Well, let's talk about that, Prabir. Sorry to interrupt you. Let's talk about that, because you just said that before there was a policy of actually supporting Palestinians, but now as the Indian government gets closer and closer to the apartheid regime of Israel. Tell me how policy has changed and how does it affect those activists, those who actually support the Palestinians in India on the ground?
Well, let's put it this way. Earlier, when we came out of our anti-colonial struggles, the freedom movement, we were very close to the decolonization movement struggles all over the world, whether it's in Africa, Asia, or in other parts. And certainly, the issue of settler colonial state Israel was central to that kind of politics. This was really what non-alignment really was. It wasn't non-aligned between the two military blocs, but it was non-alignment included this concept of decolonization, which I think was very central to that kind of politics which came up after independence. It had a unity of almost all sections except the right-wing politics which supported at the time the United States and also wanted a majoritarian state in India. And that is unfortunately the one which also saw itself as partners to Israeli politics and looked at the Palestinian struggle not as a struggle for a free Palestine against apartheid and settler colonialism, but as a project of Islamic nature. And this whole issue of making it religious identity-based politics is something which we are also grappling with today. So that politics which has changed made it possible when this particular kind of politics, which the present government also represents, means that they do see an alignment with Israel. At the same time, they also want to be a player in West Asia. Therefore, they also are trying to make their relationship with other players over here. Iran was very important once upon a time. It still is important, but under the United States pressure, they had actually weakened their relationship with Iran. But now, after the Ukraine war, you see India trying to again take a more independent position in terms of foreign policy. What relationship it will have with West Asia and Israel is something we need to watch. As of now, Israel still means a close ally of the current government. And therefore, while there are large numbers of people who support the Palestinian cause, we have a strong boycott, divestment, sanctions movement in India. We celebrate the struggle of the Palestinians at different points of time, including today. But the kind of broad support that existed in India, let's face it, has weakened with the rise of identity politics in India.
Okay. Let me turn to Mumbai and get our next guest involved in this conversation, Firuz Mithibarala from the National General Secretary, the India-Palestine Solidarity Forum. Thank you so much for being with us. We've been just talking to another guest inside of India, and he talked about basically what is happening inside of India as the Indian government has become closer to the Israeli regime and how that has affected the movement. Well, you're involved in the Palestine Solidarity Forum. I want to talk about that. And do you see negative effects on your movement, or are you still effective in trying to make more and more people aware of what is happening in Palestine?
See, I think the two forces in India that are still committed to the Palestine solidarity struggle are the leftist parties, the various communist Marxist parties, and the other is the people's movement. Though even within the people's movement, there are very few groups like us, though we have been at it for more than three decades, at least I have, in terms of ensuring that the solidarity movement in India carries on. And I think in the last 20 years, the solidarity movement has grown a bit stronger. There is even far more awareness within the rest of the people's movement in terms of the Palestinian struggle. And in fact, this year we will have Naftali Bennett visiting India to mark 30 years of the India-Israel ties. The ties that were revived by the Congress Party, not by the right-wing BJP. Though the right-wing RSS, BJP are, natural allies, so to speak, with the Zionist Nazis, because the Hindutva Nazis and the Zionist Nazis are aligning with each other. So, yes, the movement should have been far more stronger because India has a rich history of standing with the Palestinians ever since 1917. So the tradition goes back right into our freedom struggle. We stood with Yasser Arafat, we stood the Palestinians all through the 80s. But post-90, we know that there has been a change, a decline. But yes, I think, yes, we do have a
solidarity movement in India, which is relatively good, but it needs to be doing far more work.
Well, Firuz, when we look at the history of India, and of course being colonialized by the British for many years, there would seem to be more of a natural alliance that should be the norm. Is it because of now Indian government policy and getting closer to Tel Aviv that has sort of watered down the pro-Palestinian activism? Or do you see that it has been watered down or not?
In fact, I believe that after the coming of the Modi regime in 2014, there is far more awareness in India about the ties of Israel and the right-wing government and the various right-wing organizations to Israel. Prior to 2014, not many people, not many activists understood these connections. But now they understand the ties between Israeli Zionism, because that is a supremacist ideology, and what we refer to Hindutva as political Hinduism, and what we also refer to Brahmanism or Manuad, which is the supremacist ideology within the Hindus, the Hindutva ideology, as we have Wahhabism, which is a supremacist Islamic ideology. Okay, so the coming together of various supremacist ideologies, be it Christian Zionism or Jewish Zionism or Wahhabist Islam or the Hindutva variant, this is a reality. These connections are being drawn by the lower caste movements in India as well, where they realize this coming together of the upper caste of India, upper caste supremacists, and the Israeli supremacists in both in Tel Aviv and in the US and in Europe. So that is one realization that has dawned within the movement. Otherwise, these connections were not being made. Because even the left normally only spoke about imperialism, but they did not see the connection between Zionism and imperialism. They did not understand that the Iraq war was not only about oil, it was also about the Israeli, Greater Israel project in the region. So this has been happening in the last 20 years. Zionism, colonialism, and imperialism, this alliance. But that is what you're saying, that India has its own rich tradition of fighting the British. So what are we doing with the Israelis? What are we doing with the supremacists? The point is that the current dispensation, especially in India, the Bharatiya Janata Party and the Rashtriya Swayamsevak Sangh, the right-wing Hindu organizations, were not part of the freedom struggle. They opposed the freedom struggle. They opposed Mahatma Gandhi. They collaborated with the British. And it was Savarkar, one of the ideologues of the Hindutva movement, who basically said that Hindus and Muslims are two different nations and Hindus and Muslims cannot live together. After which, Muhammad Ali Jinnah picked it up, and then we had the partition of India. Of course, the British played a role in the partition of India. The Muslim League on one hand, led by Muhammad Ali Jinnah, and the Hindutva led by Savarkar and Hegdever and other Hindutva ideologues. So the point is that the current government in India has nothing to do with the freedom struggle. They were collaborators. So for them to have this alliance with a colonial power like Israel is not really a surprise. It is a very natural alliance.
Well, probably your take on this, because if we look at the situation with this natural alliance, if we want to say, by the Indian government with the Israeli regime, I want to talk about the effects that overall that could backfire or have actually inside of India itself. As our other guest was talking about, especially the growing of extremism in various from various perspectives inside of India right now. Do you see a correlation with that and the Indian government getting closer and closer to a racist regime like the Zionists?
Ideologically,
I'll
it's
go back
clear.
To Gujarat.
This is for proper. Go ahead.
It's ideologically clear that imperialism, racism, and this kind of identity-based politics go together. That, I think, is something which is clear to all of us and has been clear for a long time, that imperialism finds identities useful in making each other fight and therefore preventing the alliance of the broad oppressed people of the world. And I think that is central to what's happening. Also, Because as imperialism weakens, you're going to see all of this coming together, that in its defeat, the U.S. imperialism or Western imperialism is going to try and make each other fight. I think the issue really is that it's going to be fragmented, and it's not going to happen that simultaneously all groups of oppressed people will come together. It's going to be a much longer process. Yes, we have a fight in India. Yes, I think there is no doubt that a section of the Indian people today who believe in the Hindu supremacist ideology do see Israel as its allies, but they also have to bear with the objective fact. Israel itself is getting increasingly isolated in West Asia, and how the West Asian people will react in the future will determine also India's trajectory, because after all, India has to live in the region. There is West Asia, there is Central Asia, there is South Asia. All of these are going to be places where India has to play its role. And that role means also relationship with all the West Asian countries and their people. So I don't think we should separate the Indian politics from the larger politics at play. And I think what you're seeing is Western imperialism much more desperate because it's losing ground. And therefore, the whole set of divisive politics coming up in different parts of the world. And yes, how to build a broad anti-colonial, anti-imperialist unity with all the people in the region, I think is a key task, whether it's Central Asia, West Asia, or South Asia. This is a larger project that we have to really construct. And certainly, India is at the center of this struggle as well.
Interesting point that you've just made. Well, Firuz, I want you to pick up on what Prabhu just said, that now the goal, it has to be this coalition or this organization between peoples and perspectives in order to fight this type of imperialism and Zionism. Your take in general of what needs to be done at this point in time to increase awareness, first of all, about the reality on the ground in Palestine, and also to be able to help, to be able to be effective in actually stopping the Zionist regime.
Right. Praveer Purkash has spoken well. I think one dimension needs to be added of an awakening, or rather large awareness of possible Muslim genocide in India. This needs to be part of the narrative now, part of the struggle against the Zionist imperialist alliance and the Hindutva alliance. The other thing I'd like to say, that Israel is not isolated in West Asia right now. You have UAE, you have Saudi, essentially Bahrain, Morocco, Sudan, Egypt, and even Jordan, who are essentially allies. We had the meeting in the Negev. So we have one is the Israeli collaborator bloc comprising of certain great Arab Islamic countries. So that is a collaborator axis. And then there is the resistance axis centered around Palestine, Lebanon, Syria, Iran, Iraq, and Yemen. And then, of course, then there are the Arab and Muslim and Christian masses of the region and the others who are essentially Palestine. The people of Morocco are with Palestine. The people of Sudan are with Palestine. I think if the people of UAE and the Saudis are the same, that would be the same. Jordan, the people are definitely with Palestine. So one is the Arab people. There are certain Arab and Muslim Islamic governments that are with the Palestinian cause. And then we have the resistance axis. Now, interestingly, on the issue of Ukraine, Israel is totally the Americans. India, after Afghanistan, has realized you cannot trust the Americans. So we have a different Indian position on the entire Russian thing. We're not going to the Americans, very interestingly. But what is worrying about the Israeli model is that in 2002, when we had the Gujarat genocide, we had by Modi, we had the attacks on the camps of Jenin with bulldozers. Again, in 2022, we are witnessing the attacks on the Al-Aqsa, which we did last week, and we had bulldozers set upon Muslim areas during Ramzan. So the point is that the Israeli method of dealing with people who are, fighting for their rights, for their basic rights of existence, the governments of in India, the state governments are actually deploying bulldozers for people who are trying to resist the rioting mobs. So the point is, that is why I said that as part of the movement against Israel, the issue of the genocide of Indian Muslims and the growing attack on Christians should also be part of the narrative, as is actually now more and more people across the world, more and more human rights movements across the world are talking about it. In fact, there is one expert on genocide who has said that of the 8 stages, India has reached the 7th stage. And there's one Indian writer who has written that it is a matter of when a Muslim genocide, an anti-Muslim pogrom, could take place, because India is now in 1940s Germany. We have gone past the 1930s phase. We are right in 1940s Germany. Now, coming to the last part of your question, is that essentially the other part of the alliance is the rallying cry, Mandir Vahi Banayenge, we will build a temple at that very spot. We had that in Ayodhya in 92-93, where we, on the 6th of December, the Babri Masjid got destroyed to build the temple of Ram at that spot. And we know that this is what the Israelis, the Zionist fanatics, want to destroy the Al-Aqsa and the Dome of the Rock. They are also, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the Church of Nativity, they're all under the scanner, they're all under attack. So essentially, to build up a global movement, once again, because post-2012, after the war on Syria, a lot of things began to collapse. So the rallies towards Gaza stopped, the global mobilization towards Palestine all came to a halt. I think the global solidarity movements again needs to start galvanizing, mobilizing, and organizing campaigns in where we are marching towards Palestine. We have done two. One is we had organized the first ever Asian convoy to Gaza, and then we realized that the focus should be on Jerusalem. In 2012, we organized the global march to Jerusalem. The time has again come to focus on Jerusalem, on all of occupied Palestine. I'm talking about 1948, not only 1967, obviously. Because we saw in the last year that all of Israel, Palestine 1948, the West Bank after a long time, and Gaza all had arisen. All the cities in occupied Israel had arisen. So on the one hand, you have the collaborator axis, the normalization axis. Basically, it is, I think, an alliance against Iran, because the JCPO deal also doesn't seem to be going anywhere. Israel and America again struck a deal on Ukraine, I think, and Iran is going to have a tough time. I mean, Iran doesn't care all that much in any case, but let's see where that goes. As I think Prabir very well rightly said, that an alliance of the peoples of South Asia, Central Asia, and West Asia is essential. We have an alliance between the peoples of South Asia and West Asia to a certain degree. The Central Asian countries are still not within our purview as yet. And even within South Asia, we have massive problems because of the India-Pakistan politics that is played out by our two governments. South Asia continues to be one of the most oppressed, deprived, poverty-stricken regions of the world, and very badly connected. So South Asia itself needs a stronger people's movement for South Asian peace and solidarity, but it has to be in sync with the West Asian people's struggle and the people of Central Asia as well. So there are plans that we can formulate. In fact, we are again discussing the possibility of a land convoy from across the world back to Palestine, since now we are done with this COVID drama, and work towards mobilizing for the cause of Palestine again. Yes.
All right. Well, I'd like to thank both my guests out of India for being with me on this section of our rolling coverage on International Day of Ghosts. That's Prabir Purkayastha, activist and journalist out of New Delhi, and Firuz Mithiborala from the National General Secretary, India Palestine Solidarity Forum, out of Mumbai. And viewers, you're looking at live images again coming from, right now you're looking at images of Tehran, but we had earlier seen images from various cities throughout the country that once again people are turning out in mass. This is in the holy city of Qom there, that you're looking at these aerial footage now of a very dense, actually, and compact area filled with ralliers today, once again coming out after two years of COVID restrictions, coming out in mass to show their support for the Palestinian cause. Now you're looking at the city of Sanandaj. And earlier we were looking at various cities. And, you know, Omid, it's really interesting because one of the cities that they were showing, and hello, Omid.
Hi.
Welcome you. My colleague here in the studio with me. It was interesting because one of the cities showing was Bandar Abbas. Bandar Abbas is 36 degrees right now.
Yes.
And, of course, this is a fasting day. It's not easy. But once again, the Iranian nation, the people, show their support with the Palestinian
cause.
That's
absolutely true. After 2 years of hiatus as a result of COVID-19 pandemic, people are back on the streets to mark the International Quds Day, which occurs on the last Friday, as Marzia said, of the holy month of Ramadan. And in some cities, it's really scorching hot, just like Marzia pointed out. In Bandar Abbas, for example, it's upwards of 36 degrees Celsius, and ralliers are fasting. So it's not something easy to do, but they're, again, marking this day to show their solidarity with the Palestinian people and with the Palestinian cause. A little bit of background, as you're seeing these live images that are coming in from various cities across Iran, I should stress that these rallies are held in over 900 cities and towns in Iran alone, especially in the capital, Tehran. Now you're looking at some live images that we are getting. But some background, in 1979, the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, designated this day as the International Quds Day. And since then, every year, mass rallies are held to mark this day and show solidarity and support for the Palestinian cause, to condemn the Israeli atrocities and crimes that they have committed. Many human rights watchers and human rights activists believe that what Israel has been doing in the occupied territories amounts to war crimes, genocide, ethnic cleansing. And so Muslims around the world on the International Quds Day gather together, convene to mark this day and express their solidarity with the Palestinians. Now, our correspondent in Tehran, Saman Khujuri, is with us. Saman, it's good to be talking to you. So please tell us where you're stationed right now and what's happening there.
Well, I'm talking to you from Angolab Avenue. This is one of the main meeting places for demonstrators and participants at the rallies. And today is the International Quds Day rally. As you can see right behind me, people are coming in groups to demonstrate their support, to show their support for the Palestinian causes. People have gathered and got together here at Angolab Avenue to show their support and also to voice their anger and to vent their anger at the Israeli occupation of Palestine. With more than four decades since Iran introduced the International Quds Day, designated by the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, back in 1979, over the past 40 years, Iranians from all walks of life have joined hands, have come together on this international day to voice support for the Palestinian cause, to voice their anger at the Israeli occupation of Palestine, and also to work and to shout at the brutalities and the crimes committed by Israelis against the Palestinians, who are just asking for their lands, their homelands, to be taken back. So all these people are here because they believe that Palestinians are an oppressed nation, and they believe that the oppressed nations should be supported. And through their massive turnout at the rallies each year, they are sending out this message to the outside world that Muslim support and even non-Muslim support is growing larger day by day for Palestinians. And according to the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, will be the day in as soon as possible when the Palestine will be returned back, will come back to the arms of the Islamic world. And still, the issue of Palestine is the main concern of the Islamic world. And even Muslims and non-Muslims, even Jews and people from different religious minorities are attending such International Quds Day rallies, not just in Iran, but across the world, as incoming images and pictures are showing, not just in Iran, not just in Tehran, but also different cities across the country, and even other countries and cities, hundreds and hundreds of cities across the world. Such rallies are being held every day to keep the name of Palestine alive and also to remember that still the issue of Palestine is the main concern and the number one issue of the Islamic world that Muslims and non-Muslims, freedom seekers around the world will never forget. We'll never forget Palestinians. Among these people, you may find people who are not even Muslims. There are Jews, Zoroastrians, and Christians, whom I had the chance to talk to a couple of minutes ago. But generally speaking, all are united when it comes to the name of Palestine. When it's the name of Palestine and also standing against the brutalities and the crimes against the Palestinian people, all Muslims and freedom-seeking nations around the world become united because they believe that oppressed people of nation, oppressed nations of the world, not just Palestine, but other oppressed nations around the world should be supported. If they are human beings, other humans should respond to their call of support. And that's why people are here to join hands, to send out this signal to the outside world that Palestine will never be alone. And all these people are here to vent their anger at the brutalities and crimes against Palestinians over the past couple of years. This demonstration has gained much importance, as in a couple of days during the holy month of Ramadan, Israeli forces attacked Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And this has drawn much condemnations from Muslims and non-Muslims around the world. And this has also injected fresh energy to all the supporters of Palestine. They want to show once again, respond to the call of the Palestinians to help them. They want, through their presence and a strong and massive turnout here, they want to say that Palestine will be alive and people should not be felt alone. And through all their international channels, Iranians and non-Iranians, Muslims and all non-Muslims even, will join hands to help and support Palestine. Back to you.
Salman, appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining us. That was Salman Khujri, our correspondent in Tehran. As you can see behind Salman, rallies are being held and it's a mass turnout. We have Youssef Jalali, our correspondent, also in Tehran. Youssef, it's good to be talking to you. So tell us where you are right now and what's going on there.
Well, of course, where I'm standing is the hotspot of the international Quds rallies in Tehran. And as you see, the streets are jam-packed with people, demonstrators who are calling for an end to the Israeli occupation of Palestine and to the Israeli violence against Palestinians, which in recent days has intensified. Israel has intensified its crackdown on Palestinians and has been attacking Palestinian worshippers since the start of the holy month of Ramadan, and that has infuriated Muslims around the world. And that is why you see this year's Quds rallies are even more crowded than the previous years. People have found it as an opportunity to raise awareness of the Palestinian suffering and vent their anger at the Israeli occupation and violence towards Palestinians. And this is why you see that not only in Iran, but across the world, Muslims and even non-Muslims, as my colleague also mentioned, have taken part in the in this year's Quds rallies to of course, sympathize with Palestinians and show solidarity with the Palestinian people who have been suffering under some 74 years of occupation. Like three generations of Palestinians have been living under occupation. And this has come amid a heavy silence internationally, and the international community, these people say, needs to speak out about the Palestinian suffering. These people demand that the United Nations avoid and stop paying lip service to the Palestinian cause and take a real practical action to bring the Palestinian suffering to an end and oppose the Israeli occupation of Palestinians. This is the main theme of the International Quds Day that you see taking place around the world. And Iranians, this is the first year after 2 years that Iranians are taking part and going out on the streets physically to take part in the GOATS rallies as over the past 2 years, the International GOATS Day was marked without physical participation as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. So once again, people you see enthusiastically and passionately taking part in the GOATS rallies to voice their anger at the ongoing Israeli violence against Palestinians. And interestingly, we see that when we take a look at the Israeli media, I was reading an article by Times of Israel, and in Times of Israel, they have justified the recent intensification of the violence against Palestinians by Israeli forces as a means to crack down on what they call Palestinian terrorists. And that, as put by people I talked to today, is laughable because Israel's presence in Palestine is illegitimate and the mere presence of Israelis there is illegal. So how come they describe the nation that is the population that is aboriginal to the Palestinian lands as terrorists? And these people say this needs to stop. This needs to stop, and the international community needs to take a practical step towards the end of the occupation and towards the freedom and the liberation of Palestinian lands from decades-long Israeli occupation.
Yusuf, as we speak, I can see people who are walking past you. They're holding signs and placards and flags, some of them depicting the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, and some of them depicting Major General Qasem Soleimani. Can you tell us more about the marching routes and what people usually do to mark the International Quds Day in Tehran?
Well, of course, it has turned into a culture in Iran since the start of the Islamic Republic and the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979. The late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, who led the revolution to victory in 1979, designated the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan as a day of Quds, as a day for the liberation of Palestinians from occupation, as a day to raise awareness and bring the Palestinian suffering to light amid attempts by Israel to mask and to sweep its crimes under the rug. So this is an occasion for Iranians to show their solidarity with Palestinians. And usually they start from the Inqilab Square or the Revolution Square in downtown Tehran, and they take the path to Imam Hossein Square to the east of Tehran, and Azadi Square to the west of Tehran. So this is the usual route that is taken by people in Tehran, at least the capital. But of course, the capital, Tehran, is not the only place where people go out on the streets and, of course, take part in the GOATS rallies. We see that Iranians across the country take part in the GOATS rallies, of course. And this has turned into a culture. Iranians want to show solidarity and sympathize with the Palestinian people on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan. And why the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan? It is the doomed day for the collapse and the downfall of Israel. They say that on this day, the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan, and because all Muslims around the world are fasting and observing the holy month of Ramadan, it gives them a sense of unity and synergy to together go out on the streets and chant the same slogans around the world.
Yusuf, thank you so much for the information that you provided us with. That was Yusuf Jalili, our correspondent in Tehran. And then again, mass turnout in Tehran and over 900 other cities and towns across Iran. People are marking International Quds Day to show their solidarity with the Palestinian people and their cause. Marzia, what was interesting to me was the turnout. It was fantastic, huge. And people were really, they were united in force, I would say, to show their support for the Palestinian people. And it's not limited to Muslims alone. Non-Muslims alike are marking this event, and they are calling for an end to the illegal occupation of Palestinian territories.
Very much so. You know, Omid, of course, Iran has a history of the people turning out in mass, 43 years to be exact, since the victory of the Islamic Revolution, that the people have continued to turn out in mass. And one thing that Omid said, that it's just not Muslims, it's Christians, it's from all different perspectives. And I think one thing that is really interesting that has to be reiterated, that, of course, even inside of Palestine itself, it is not just the Muslims that we're seeing that are oppressed. I mean, we saw the Christians, even for Good Friday this year, that they were prevented from actually going to be able to worship in one of the most important of course, days on the Christian calendar. So a lot of times this is framed in the way that it is something for Muslims only. This is a movement for the liberation of Palestinians, all Palestinians, and, of course, an anti-oppression movement in general. And I think that that's something that is really important that we have to look at. And of course, when we talk about anti-oppression and we talk about resistance movements, I want to welcome my next two guests to help open that side of things that I want to look at right now out of Cape Town. I think we have both of our guests. Out of Cape Town, we have Bram Hankum, board member of Africa for Palestine. And out of Oakland, California, co-host Press TV's We the People, Abbas Motaqim. Thank you for being with us. Starting it off with Abbas, thanks so much. Good to have you on. I was talking about the anti-oppression movements and solidarity, basically, that many of the movements have had or have with the Palestinian cause. Now, you're in Oakland. Oakland, very, very, of course, significant city. If we look at the history, especially for the Black movement, the Black Panther movement, I want to talk about, in general, when we look at especially African peoples or the Black Panther movement or the Black movement in general in the United States, and correlation do you see with the Palestinian movement? I know that Huey Newton, way back when, had basically condemned and said that actually Israel was created by Western imperialism and maintained by Western firepower. So it has a long history, long background of that solidarity. Your take, Abbas?
Oh, yes, definitely. I think we as African people, we as a new African people, especially living here in the mother colony, right, the mother colony of America, we know that we are no stranger to settler colonialism, as the Palestinian people are no stranger to settler colonialism. We are living here on this land that was stolen by European Americans, and then we as Africans was forced on this land to till the labor, forced to build this empire. And now we see the connection between the plight of the African, the plight of the new African, right? These same military weapons that are being built inside prisons from Africans who are enslaved inside prisons are being used by the U.S. regime to use imperialism, right? So these weapons that is being used by the illegal Zionist entity that has no right to exist is being used and produced here in this mother colony based off our own exploitation, right? So we can see the dialectical connection of the plight of Africans and the plight of Palestine. And we must be in solidarity. We must be in solidarity. It's a joint struggle against the great Shaitan of the United States of America. We know that if we as new Africans rise up and resist in this, the party understood that if we rise up and resist here in this mother colony, we know that Palestine can as well be free, right? Because we know that there is no such thing as Israel without Western firepower. There is no such thing as Israel without the support of the United States regime that has no right to exist, that has given Israel $150 billion. And that is the money that we know of, right, to oppress and to occupy Palestinian land. So it's a joint struggle against settler colonialism. Mm-hmm. It's a joint struggle against imperialism. And this is a part of our struggle. This is part of our struggle.
Well, Abbas, when we look at it, sorry to jump in here, but when we look at, in general, again, talking about the Black movement inside the United States, do you think that there has been attempts to basically make sure that that alliance is not enhanced? The alliance between Black American revolutionaries and Palestinians, basically, it seems that there has been purposeful attempts to make sure that that connection is not made. I mean, we saw even a former CNN contributor, Mark Lamont Hill, and basically just saying something at the UN, and he says, that he was supporting for Palestine from the, what nothing really major that he said, but just the fact that he said that Palestine is from the river to the sea at the United Nations caused him to lose his job. So I want to talk about the ramifications for specifically movements for the oppressed in the United States and when they try to have an alliance between themselves and other entities like Palestinians.
Oh, yeah. Of course, we know that the United States media is ran by the Central Intelligence Agency. We saw a CIA agent being the head of Time magazine, CNN, Fox News, all the corporate controlled media of the United States is part of the war propaganda machine. Meaning if you go against the war propaganda machine, you're gonna lose your job, right? So what Mark Lamont Hill did was stand by humanity, stand with the righteous, right? And the state will do everything in its power to stop not only the liberation of new Africans here, but to stop the liberation of Palestinians in Palestine, right? So we must combat the state. We must combat the state, and we know that the state will always try and pit struggles up against one another.
Okay, well, let me cross over to the continent itself, going to Africa. Speaking out of Cape Town, Bram Henekamp, board member of African for Palestine. Thank you so much for being with us here today at Press TV's coverage of International Thoughts Day. Your take on the, do you see a natural alliance in general? We look at it, especially if we look at South Africa and the history of oppression in that country. And, of course, we know that from the anti-apartheid movement itself of South Africa, which was also at the same time very pro-Palestinian. Your take on all of this? Bram, do I have you?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. Go ahead.
Yes, I was saying absolutely we can really relate both to the oppression of a peoples by another people, but also, unfortunately, in our country, we've got a lot of people who can relate to the oppressing of other peoples. So, you know, within our solidarity work and within our work on the continent, we often find that the same companies and the same businessmen and the same people who are very involved in funding and supporting apartheid propaganda are funding and supporting Israeli propaganda in our country and in our continent. There are examples of prominent donors from the Jewish Board of Deputies in South Africa who we have evidence funded the apartheid South African regime as well. So, you know, we have a very long history of solidarity with Palestine, but unfortunately, on the other hand, we have a number of people who have a long history of being in bed with the Israeli regime from its onset, because just like apartheid South Africa, Israel is an apartheid state, so there was a common interest among the racist white oppressors in South Africa and that of Israel.
And the effect of, I mean, when we look at as far as the effect of that racist perspective, whether we're talking about imperialism or we're talking about Zionism, inside of South Africa, I mean, even today, though, of course, the apartheid regime no longer exists, the importance, though, I want to talk about, of when an apartheid regime is dismantled, like it was dismantled in South Africa, but then at the end of the day, changing all the dynamics that were part of apartheid, whether that's talking about from a not only political perspective, but economically, the importance of that.
I think that South Africa remains one of, if not the most unequal society in the world. Mm-hmm. And that's not the legacy of Mandela we want, you know?
Would you say that a part of that is because certain aspects of that apartheid regime really was never removed? From a political perspective, of course, blacks and colored people have been, if you want to say, empowered. But from an economic perspective, and many would say that still the power would be in the hands of those that it always was in. Your perspective about that and the importance, my main goal of looking at this is because people are talking about dismantling the apartheid regime in occupied Palestinian territories, when it is dismantled, how important is it that all the dynamics then are changed?
Absolutely. I mean, in South Africa, in my opinion is that, you know, racism still continued in the economic and social environment. The mainstream was still largely controlled by white people. But I do think that that's changed. It's now controlled by white and black people. But the problem is, to the oppressed, it is more hurtful, in fact, when the oppressor is a black person. You know, you get examples of farms which are changed ownership, and then you have a black farmer, but the black farmer also equally exploiting, and sometimes in certain cases, well, at least as badly as the worst of the worst white oppressive farmers treat their workers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, we mustn't be shy of the fact that as, and hopefully we do see freedom in Palestine, we mustn't be shy that the ability of Palestinians to oppress other Palestinians in the same capitalist system is not an impossibility at all. So
it's important then, what I'm getting from what you're saying, then it is important. It's not the color of a skin, it's the ideology, it's the perspective that one's whole. And with that, I want to switch back to Oakland and get Abbas back in on that discussion that I talk about the ideology, the perspective that is important, because it doesn't matter the color of the skin. We've seen oppressors in all colors and all forms. Your take on that, Abbas, and the importance of this, because you being in the United States, I mean, years ago we saw, for example, a black president that actually was more oppressive probably to the black community than others had been. Or we see this situation in the United States, whether it's a Republican administration and then it's shown to be oppressive and then they send in the Democrats to rescue, but basically it's all the same. The importance of people understanding that it is it's ideology that is more important. And the color of the skin or the land that one is from is really not as important as far as the resistance and being an anti-imperialist.
Oh, yeah. You know, the best of us is he who is most righteous, right? And we know that we right now, as black people, as new Africans living in the so-called United States of America, we are living in a state of neocolonialism, meaning that they used integration as a containment strategy to contain the revolutionary nationalist movements that were seeking to free the land from Euro-American control. And what they did is they replaced that system with a neocolonial system where they integrated the black man into the White House. They integrated the black man to become a cop on the street. So instead of having a white cop on the street harassing, now you have a black cop on the street harassing, right? So what they have done is they have installed a regime where now it's, everything has changed. Martin Luther King's dream has been reached. But in reality, that dream has turned into a nightmare where now you have a black president who was elected by the name of Barack Obama installing AFRICOM and bombing the continent, right? And then now we have a vice president by the name of Kamala Harris who spent her career out here in Oakland and in San Francisco locking up black people as a district attorney. She was a police officer. That, by definition, was a police officer. So our fight is also against neocolonialism. We see the continent of Africa also in the state of neocolonialism. It gives all the illusions of being independence, but it is not truly independent. It is sham independence, as Kwame Nkrumah put it, right? To where now you have normalization of African countries with the so-called Zionist regime, right? Where they dangle money and economic contracts to now be a part of this capitalist one world order and in favor with imperialism. So we must fight against neocolonialism and fight against the black oppressors that are put into our community that have the same colonialist imperialist ideology of this state. That's why we must fight to free the land.
And what would your advice? And what would your advice be, Abbas, to the Palestinians about this same thing?
You cannot. The enemy has no moral conscience, so we cannot even think the way the enemy thinks. We have to have a revolutionary ideology that seeks to end the settler colonial occupation, that is unwavering. We cannot join the enemy. It cannot be integration into the enemy's regime. We must fight the regime in its entirety till it no longer cease to exist, because the Zionist regime has no right to exist, the same way the apartheid South African regime has no right to exist, the same way the United States American regime has no right to exist under international law. So my suggestion, which we already see the Palestinian people doing, we see Hamas doing, we see them fighting back by any means necessary, And we also have to look at the internationalism of the Palestinian struggle. We've seen Iran support the independence movement of Palestine. So we must be in solidarity, because the great Shaitan is America and Israel, and is going to take people regardless of race, regardless of where they are, fighting back, because we know that the enemy in many ways is everywhere. So we must fight back.
Well, Bram, in Africa itself, in South Africa itself, do you see that the support for Palestinians, first of all, the